This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Mary Louise Kelly.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Good morning. President Obama will be talking about the economy this week in a couple of swing states. He travels tomorrow to Missouri, where the jobless rate is a bit below the national average, but still a painfully high 9.3%. Mr. Obama wants to extend unemployment benefits, but Republican senators have blocked that move, saying it will add to the deficit. NPR's Scott Horsley has more.
In his trip to Kansas City tomorrow, President Obama plans to visit a company that makes electric trucks. The Smith Electric Vehicle Company employs about 50 people, and it's hoping to double that payroll this year with help from a $32 million grant from the U.S. Energy Department. Sandy Garrison would very much like to get one of those new Smith jobs. The Kansas City woman was laid off from her last job in 2008, and except for some temporary and contract assignments, she's been out of work for the last year and a half.
I get out and network all the time, and I go to job clubs. You know, I really, really try hard to find a job. But, you know, still I have not been the chosen candidate.
At her last interview, Garrison says, for an administrative assistant's position, she was one of 350 applicants. All those people looking for work aren't getting a lot of encouragement from the news these days. Private employers added just 80,000 jobs last month. President Obama says the economy is moving in the right direction, but not fast enough.
We're fighting to speed up this recovery and keep the economy growing by all means possible. That means extending unemployment insurance for workers who lost their job. That means getting small businesses the loans they need to keep their doors open and hire new workers. And that means sending relief to states so they don't have to lay off thousands of teachers and firefighters and police officers.
Actually, Washington is not doing any of those things right now. Administration efforts to extend jobless benefits, boost small business lending, and funnel money to the states have all been blocked in the Senate by lawmakers nervous about adding to the deficit. David Walker of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation has been sounding the alarm about federal deficits for years. But even he says that's no excuse for the government to ignore more immediate concerns. Walker told the president's debt commission last week the government should tackle both problems.
In our view, to ease the economic pain of unemployment and underemployed Americans and to avoid a double-dip recession, we can and should pursue targeted and short-term initiatives that are temporary, properly designed, appropriately conditioned, and effectively implemented.
Like unemployed workers, state governments are facing their own budget crunch. The states cut some 10,000 jobs last month. White House economic advisor Christina Romer says job cuts in the states will only accelerate without more federal aid.
The idea that we're going to lay off hundreds of thousands of teachers or policemen or firefighters, right? Those are people in a job that want to stay in a job. It seems like a very smart and sensible way to keep employment up and to provide essential government services.
But a Gallup poll released last month showed Americans are just about as concerned with government debt as they are with unemployment, especially Republicans. Missouri Congressman and GOP Senate candidate Roy Blunt gives voice to that concern in a new campaign ad that began running this week.
Irresponsible spending and crippling debt are killing jobs today and our children's future tomorrow.
Job seeker Sandy Garrison is more worried about the present. Her unemployment benefits ran out last month, and unless she gets an extension or finds a new job soon, Garrison says it's going to be a lean year for her family. No eating out, no splurging, and certainly no big-ticket purchases that might give a lift to other would-be workers.
My car's 181,000 miles, so, you know, I need to get a job so that I can purchase a different car and help the economy. You know, it's going to be a tailspin pretty soon.
Unemployment is an even bigger problem in Nevada, where the jobless rate is now 14%, the nation's highest. President Obama will make another push for government relief efforts in Las Vegas on Friday. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The debate over stimulus versus deficit puts Democrats in particular in a difficult position. And to hear why, we're joined now by NPR's news analyst, Juan Williams. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary Louise.
So this is a week, of course, when members of Congress are back in their home districts campaigning for the election in November. Lots of Democrats facing very tough races. Explain what the dilemma is for them.
Repeat after me. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's all they're going to do is talk about jobs. And what you hear from the people who are running the Democratic caucus is, you know what, let's look at what happened in the recent past. They particularly talk about a special election in May in Pennsylvania in which Democrat Mark Kritz was able to win over Republican Tim Burns by simply focusing on jobs. Stay away from all the legislative controversy about health care, cap and trade, immigration, Afghanistan.
That's not resonating.
Don't
back
talk
home
about
in the districts.
It. Exactly. Just focus on jobs. I think the best example of this is a campaign going on in Virginia with a Democrat, Tom Perriello, versus Republican Robert Hurt. Hurt has a campaign website that has Pelosi and Company prominently displayed. But here's a campaign ad from the Democrat, Perriello.
I know times have been tough for Virginia families. That's why I've been so serious about jobs and economic relief for you.
I fought to add new jobs at dairy farms.
And landfill projects that turn methane waste into clean energy.
It's pretty funny ad. He goes on to mention jobs six times in a 30-second ad, and he steps in cow manure and spills coffee on himself, all to deliver on jobs.
And what is the Republican strategy at this point? Are they also all about jobs, jobs, jobs?
Well, no, I think they're a little broader. And what they're saying is if you look at the way that this government spends money, the size of the deficit, it's going to cause you concern. If you look at the response to the oil, aren't you concerned? And they're saying we have to make a change and look at Republicans, trust Republicans with the economy.
Now, the GOP also has its hurdles to leap over. Tell us a little bit about this recent gaffe from party chairman Michael Steele. How much is that going to hurt?
Well, I don't know that it will have a great impact on the election, but what it does is it creates a problem in terms of the campaign strategy and apparatus. Obviously, the Republican National Committee is the main conduit of money that goes into these campaigns, and all of a sudden, people are having questions about Michael Steele's effectiveness. Is Michael Steele saying the wrong things? Is he out of order? He said that this was Obama's war, referring to the war in Afghanistan, in a session which he was counseling Republican candidates in Connecticut. That prompted a lot of the Republicans, especially Republican pundits, and later some Republican elected officials, to say he's out of line. This was a war that was started by President Bush. This is America's war. Why is he politicizing it? That kind of internal dissension and static does not help Republican candidates.
Is Michael Steele likely to still be party chairman by the time we get to November elections?
Oh, for sure. I think that Michael Steele is in a really strong position to this extent. He's controlled the contracts going toward the Republican convention coming up for 2012. That's a lot of money, Mary Louise. And so a lot of people who are at the top of the party see removing him at this point as really destabilizing for the party. So you don't expect those people who could remove him to actually push the button at this point. And the second thing to say here is that Michael Steele, and I spoke to him just this weekend repeatedly, Michael Steele feels like he's been taken out of context, and he's making the case that he is being unfairly pilloried and treated badly. And, of course, he's the only black Republican chairman in history in a party that has no blacks or Hispanics in its caucus. So I think it's very difficult for the party to remove him at this time.
One, just briefly, back to the jobs issue. And I want to ask you about unemployment. Congress went on break without extending unemployment benefits. Is that a political risk for the members of Congress who voted against it?
It is a risk. And of course, this is overwhelmingly the Republicans. Republicans say the money should have come out of unspent stimulus money. Democrats are saying we just have to appropriate these funds because people, especially folks with long-term unemployment, we have a record number of them in the country right now, need some relief. This is, again, very risky for the Republicans. If Americans respond to this in terms of not a deficit issue, but a lack of compassion for those who are out of work, it again fires up the Democratic base going into the election.
Juan, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Mary Louise.
That's NPR news analyst Juan Williams. NPR's business news starts with the president's push for more exports. After a string of bad economic numbers, President Obama has some good news to deliver today. He's expected to say this hour that he's on track to achieve his goal of doubling exports in the next 5 years. In comments released by the White House, Mr. Obama says that exports in the first 4 months of this year are up almost 17% over the same period last year. Mr. Obama's remarks are part of a progress report on a new group to boost exports. It's called the National Export Initiative, and it aims to boost jobs and the economy.
This week, we're talking about managers and managing. Today, we talk to a man who doesn't mince words when it comes to his thoughts on that yearly or twice-yearly ritual called the performance review. business professor Samuel Colbert wrote a book called Get Rid of the Performance Review. He joined us in our studios in Los Angeles to talk about that book and his theories. Thank you very much for joining us.
Nice to be here.
Now, this book originated in an article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of years ago, and it generated enormous response, both agreeing with you and also disagreeing with your point. So start off by telling us why you think performance reviews ought to just disappear.
Well, there's just two small reasons. First, they're dishonest and fraudulent. And second, they're just plain bad management.
Well, there you go. All right.
And the managers in the service of saying they're evaluating performance create the circumstances for people to be their worst. They're not going to get once you start with performance reviews, you're not going to hear what people really think. You're not going to hear them talk about what's wrong and going wrong. They're not going to talk about results they have doubts about. They're going to talk about all their successes. It becomes total baloney.
When you say makes for bad management, though, you've written that there are two agendas in a performance review and that in a way make people speak at cross purposes.
That's right. They start off in a clash. The boss already has heard with his boss what he want to pay the guy or the woman. So they come up with a review that's all backwards. It's just to tell the employee what he or she needs to do to become more effective. The employee walks in thinking she or he has done a wonderful job and wants to get credit. They've got a few things at stake, like pay, career, promotion. The employee wants to be seen as a positive. They want to have known that their real talents and contributions were seen and recognized.
Well, it would seem, though, that that doesn't necessarily mean get rid of the performance review. It may mean tweak it in certain ways. There are certainly performance reviews out there now that are based on what someone might call objectively metrics. I've seen examples where nurses are judged on rates of infection in their unit. Could not many jobs have those sorts of specifics?
Some jobs you can score the production. That's a different metric. We're scoring production. But that's not all somebody does. You could have a salesperson who sells a lot of product and in the process gives a company a bad reputation. Once you set up the metrics, that's the only focus for the employee. The problem with performance reviews is that the metric that counts most for the employee is the boss's opinion. So the employee starts doing what he or she thinks is going to score in the boss's mind and not even talk about what he or she believes is necessary for the company to get the results that really count.
Samuel Colbert is a professor of the Anderson School of Management at the University of California, Los Angeles. His new book is Get Rid of the Performance Review, How Companies Can Stop Intimidating, Start Managing, and Really Focus on What Really Matters. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, really my pleasure. Thank you, Renee.
And if you love performance reviews or hate them or have any other opinions about them at all, let us know at npr.org. Tomorrow, we talk about how managers can amplify the talent around them, and it does not involve performance reviews.